This edX was produced by Les Bowler, St. Ives, Dorset. The well-beloved A Sketch of a Temperament by Thomas Hardy. Preface: The peninsula carved by time out of a single stone, whereon most of the following scenes are laid, has been for centuries immemorial the home of a curious and well-nigh distinct people, cherishing strange beliefs and singular customs, now for the most part obsolescent. Fancies, like certain soft-wooded plants which cannot bear the silent inland frosts, but thrive by the sea in the roughest of weather, seem to grow up naturally here, in particular amongst those natives who have no active concern in the labors of the isle. Hence it is a spot apt to generate a type of personage like the character imperfectly sketched in these pages, a native of natives whom some may choose to call a fantast if they honor him with their consideration so far, but whom others may see only as one that gave objective continuity and a name to a delicate dream which in a vaguer form is more or less common to all men, and is by no means new to Platonic philosophers. To those who know the rocky coin of England here depicted overlooking the great channel highway with all its suggestiveness, and standing out, so far into mid-sea, that touches of the Gulf Stream soften the air till February, it is matter of surprise that the place has not been more frequently chosen as the retreat of artists and poets in search of inspiration for at least a month or two in the year, the tempestuous rather than the fine seasons by preference. To be sure, one nook there is the retreat, at their country's expense, of other geniuses from a distance, but their presence is hardly discoverable. Yet perhaps it is as well that the artistic visitors do not come, or no more would be heard of little freehold houses being bought and sold there for a couple of £100 built of solid stone, and dating from the 16th century and earlier, with mullions, copings, and corbels complete. These transactions, by the way, are carried out and covenanted, or were till lately, in the parish church, in the face of the congregation, such being the ancient custom of the isle. As for the story itself, it may be worth while to remark that, differing from all or most others of the series in that the interest aimed at is of an ideal or subjective nature, and frankly imaginative, verisimilitude in the sequence of events has been subordinated to the said aim. The first publication of this tale in an independent form was in 1897, but it had appeared in the periodical press in 1892 under the title of The Pursuit of the Well-Beloved. A few chapters of that experimental issue were rewritten for the present and final form of the narrative. August 1912. Contents, Part 1st. A young man of 20. I a supposititious presentment of her 2. The incarnation is assumed to be true 3. The appointment IV. A lonely pedestrian VA charge VI. On the brink VI. Her earlier incarnations VI. 2 like the lightning X. Familiar phenomena in the distance, Part 2nd. A young man of 40. I the old phantom becomes distinct 2. She draws close and satisfies 3. She becomes an inaccessible ghost IV. She threatens to resume corporeal substance V. The resumption takes place VI. The past shines in the present VI. The new becomes established V. His own soul confronts him X. Juxtapositions X. She fails to vanish still XI. The image persists XI. A grill descends between Z. She is enshrouded from sight. Part 3rd. A young man of 60. I. She returns for the new season 2. Misgivings on the re-embodiment 3. The renewed image burns itself in IV. A dash for the last incarnation V. On the verge of possession VI. The well-beloved is where? VI. An old tabernacle in a new aspect V. Alas for this gray shadow, once a man. Part 1st. A young man of 20. Now, if time knows that her, whose radiant brows weave them a garland of my vows, her that dares be what these lines wish to see, I seek no further, it is she. R. Crashaw. 1. 1. a supposititious presentment of her, a person who differed from the local wayfarers, was climbing the steep road which leads through the sea-skirted townlet definable as the Street of Wells, and forms a pass into that Gibraltar of Wessex, the singular peninsula once an island, and still called such, that stretches out like the head of a bird into the English Channel. It is connected with the mainland by a long thin neck of pebbles cast up by rages of the sea, apostrophe and unparalleled in its kind in Europe. The pedestrian was what he looked like, a young man from London, and the cities of the continent. Nobody could see at present that his urbanism sat upon him only as a garment. He was just recollecting with something of self-reproach that a whole 3 years and 8 months had flown since he paid his last visit to his father at this lonely rock of his birthplace, the intervening time having been spent amid many contrasting societies, peoples, manners, and scenes. What had seemed usual in the Isle when he lived there always looked quaint and odd after his later impressions. More than ever the spot seemed what it was said once to have been, the ancient Vandilia Island, and the home of the slingers. The towering rock, the houses above houses, one man's doorstep rising behind his neighbor's chimney, the gardens hung up by one edge to the sky, the vegetables growing on apparently almost vertical planes, the unity of the whole island as a solid and single block of limestone 4 miles long, were no longer familiar and commonplace ideas. All now stood dazzlingly unique and white against the tinted sea, and the sun flashed on infinitely stratified walls of oolite, the melancholy ruins of cancelled cycles, with a distinctiveness that called the eyes to it as strongly as any spectacle he had beheld afar. After a laborious clamber he reached the top, and walked along the plateau towards the eastern village. The time being about 2 o'clock, in the middle of the summer season, the road was glaring and moldy, and drawing near to his father's house he sat down in the sun. He stretched out his hand upon the rock beside him. It felt warm. That was the island's personal temperature, when in its afternoon sleep as now. He listened, and heard sounds. Whirr whirr, saw saw saw. Those were the island snores, the noises of the quarrymen and stone sawyers. Opposite to the spot on which he sat, was a roomy cottage or homestead. Like the island it was all of stone, not only in walls, but in window frames, roof, chimneys, fence, stile, pixie, and stable, almost door. He remembered who had used to live there, and probably lived there now, the Caro family. Their own mare Caros, as they were called to distinguish them from other branches of the same pedigree, there being but half a dozen Christian and surnames in the whole island. He crossed the road and looked in at the open doorway. Yes, there they were still. Mrs. Caro, who had seen him from the window, met him in the entry, and an old-fashioned greeting took place between them. A moment after, a door leading from the back rooms was thrown open, and a young girl about 17 or 18 came bounding in. Why, 'tis dear Jose! Apostrophe apostrophe she burst out joyfully. And running up to the young man, she kissed him. The demonstration was sweet enough from the owner of such an affectionate pair of bright hazel eyes and brown tresses of hair. But it was so sudden, so unexpected by a man fresh from towns, that he winced for a moment quite involuntarily, and there was some constraint in the manner in which he returned her kiss, and said, "My pretty little advice, how do you do after so long?" Apostrophe apostrophe, for a few seconds her impulsive innocence hardly noticed his start of surprise, but Mrs. Caro, the girl's mother, had observed it instantly. With a pained flush she turned to her daughter. "Avice, my dear Avice. Why, what are you doing? Don't you know that you've grown up to be a woman since Jocelyn Mr. Pearson was last down here? Of course you mustn't do now as you used to do 3 or 4 years ago." Apostrophe apostrophe, the awkwardness which had arisen was hardly removed by Pearson's assurance that he quite expected her to keep up the practice of her childhood, followed by several minutes of conversation on general subjects. He was vexed from his soul that his unaware movement should so have betrayed him. At his leaving, he repeated that, if a vice regarded him otherwise than as she used to do, he would never forgive her. But though they parted good friends, her regret at the incident was visible in her face. Jocelyn passed out into the road, and onward to his father's house hard by. The mother and daughter were left alone. I was quite amazed at my child. Exclaimed the elder. A young man from London and foreign cities, used now to the strictest company manners, and ladies who almost think it vulgar to smile broad. How could he do it, a vice? I didn't think about how I was altered. Said the conscience-stricken girl. I used to kiss him, and he used to kiss me, before he went away. But that was years ago, my dear. Oh yes, and for the moment I forgot. He seemed just the same to me as he used to be. Well, it can't be helped now. You must be careful in the future. He's got lots of young women, I'll warrant, and has few thoughts left for you. He's what they call a sculptor, and he means to be a great genius in that line someday, they do say. Well, I've done it, and it can't be mended. Moaned the girl. Meanwhile, Jocelyn Pearson, the sculptor of budding fame, had gone onward to the house of his father, an inartistic man of trade and commerce merely, from whom, nevertheless, Jocelyn condescended to accept a yearly allowance pending the famous days to come. But the elder, having received no warning of his son's intended visit, was not at home to receive him. Jocelyn looked round the familiar premises, glanced across the common at the great yards within which eternal saws were going to and fro upon eternal blocks of stone, the very same saws and the very same blocks that he had seen there when last in the island, so it seemed to him, and then passed through the dwelling into the back garden. Like all the gardens in the isle, it was surrounded by a wall of dry jointed spalls, and at its further extremity it ran out into a corner, which adjoined the garden of the Carrows. He had no sooner reached this spot than he became aware of a murmuring and sobbing on the other side of the wall. The voice he recognized in a moment as a vice's, and she seemed to be confiding her trouble to some young friend of her own sex. Oh, what shall I do? She was saying bitterly. So bold as it was, so shameless. How could I think of such a thing? He will never forgive me, never, never like me again. He'll think me a forward hussy, and yet I quite forgot how much I had grown. But that he'll never believe. The accents were those of one who had for the first time become conscious of her womanhood, as an unwonted possession which shamed and frightened her. Did he seem angry at it? Inquired the friend. Oh no, not angry. Worse. Cold and haughty. Oh, he's such a fashionable person now, not at all an island man. But there's no use in talking of it. I wish I was dead. Pearson retreated as quickly as he could. He grieved at the incident which had brought such pain to this innocent soul, and yet it was beginning to be a source of vague pleasure to him. He returned to the house, and when his father had come back and welcomed him, and they had shared a meal together, Jocelyn again went out, full of an earnest desire to soothe his young neighbor's sorrow in a way she little expected. Though, to tell the truth, his affection for her was rather that of a friend than of a lover, and he felt by no means sure that the migratory, elusive idealization he called his love, who, ever since his boyhood, had flitted from human shell to human shell an indefinite number of times, was going to take up her abode in the body of a vice caro. 1. 2. The incarnation is assumed to be true. It was difficult to meet her again, even though on this lump of rock the difficulty lay as a rule rather in avoidance than in meeting. But a vice had been transformed into a very different kind of young woman by the self-consciousness engendered of her impulsive greeting, and, Notwithstanding their near neighborhood, he could not encounter her, try as he would. No sooner did he appear an inch beyond his father's door than she was to earth like a fox. She bolted upstairs to her room. Anxious to soothe her after his unintentional slight, he could not stand these evasions long. The manners of the Isle were primitive and straightforward, even among the well-to-do, and noting her disappearance one day he followed her into the house, and onward to the foot of the stairs. A vice. ... he called. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.